I'm Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. On today's show, I'll talk to documentary filmmaker Jen Senko, whose new movie is a pinpoint dissection and takedown of everything that's wrong with right-wing conservative political media. It's called The Brainwashing of My Dad. Stick around. Cousin Michael and friend Lindsay, you're probably going to want to put a Valium under your tongue before watching this one. Jen Senko was worried about her dad. A self-described Kennedy Democrat, Frank Senko was a peaceful, loving husband and dad whose political views were never much of an issue between him and the world. Until one day, on his long commute to work, he discovered talk radio, and Rush Limbaugh in particular. After that, Frank was never the same. He soon framed a long list of the people that he hated, and when he found the Fox News Channel, he went completely bonkers. He was angry all the time. If Rush or Fox told him something, he was unquestioning in his acceptance of it as absolutely true. His wife, his two children, Jen and her older brother, as well as extended family, friends, and co-workers, one day found a stranger living in their midst, a hate-spewing, nasty, bigoted monster, paranoid of everyone's beliefs around him. He trusted no one outside of his growing, far-right-wing conservative circle of TV and radio hosts, newsletter writers, website propagandists, and pamphleteers. Aghast at what would become of Frank, Jen, a filmmaker who had received good notices for her first release, The Vanishing City, decided to seriously investigate what had happened to her dad. The resulting film, The Brainwashing of My Dad, is a serious examination of the rise of right-wing media, the noise machine, as it's called, and its fact-free assault on the Constitution, civil rights, liberal advocacy, and much more. Senko, who shares narration duties with actor Matthew Modine, assembled a film that reveals the motivations of Roger Ailes, Clarence Thomas, Antonin Scalia, Richard Nixon, the Heritage Foundation, and the John Birch Society. And the film, which recently left the festival circuit and began theatrical, iTunes, Google Play, and Vudu distribution, was completed before the rise of Donald Trump, presidential candidate, but it makes for excellent background material to explain the Republican businessman's angry rise to political power. Jen Senko, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Bob.
Delighted to have you. A fascinating film. And I'm thinking that the marketing part of you as a filmmaker must feel that this is the perfect film for a season in which Donald Trump is the GOP's presidential frontrunner, you know, riling up crowds in the manner of right-wing radio. But I also imagine that the idealistic filmmaker in you is probably spitting blood by today's hysteria.
Well, first, before Donald Trump came along, I kept thinking, oh, I have to get this film out. I have to get this film out, you know, before the elections. And it just so happens that, you know, it's with its delay and taking time and everything takes so much time, that now is like the perfect time. And people are ready to hear it, and there's already stirrings. You know, you hear people saying, well, there's reporting like, oh, this guy killed his girlfriend because she was liberal, you know, or, you know, this guy shot up a town because, you know, he listened to Fox News. So it is really good timing. But as far as spitting blood because Donald Trump, I kind of counterbalance that with being really happy that my movie is coming out right now, because I am idealistic and I always hope that film can make a difference, and I hope that this film can make a difference and maybe can free some minds.
Well, certainly any filmmaker or author wants the timing of their project to be as good as can be, and you certainly couldn't have time. As it turned out, you couldn't have had better timing, I guess.
Right, right. That it's accidental.
Completely right. And sometimes that's the best way. Tell folks a little bit about what your dad was like before he discovered talk radio and Limbaugh.
My dad was an amazing person because he loved everybody, and he loved every type of person. It was almost as if he was like a hippie before hippies happened. You know, both my parents were very open-minded, and I never even heard them gossip. Whereas I heard other friends' parents, you go over to their house and you hear them going, oh, the person's like this or that, you know. But this was, my dad, you know, I tell a story in the film how, like, he was talking to a homeless man, and he gave him money and called him sir, and that made a huge impression on me. So I was like, oh, okay, this is how we're supposed to be in life. And, you know, I was very proud of him for that. So, yeah.
And when did you start to notice that something had changed? And then when did it become really apparent that it was life was really different for Frank?
Yeah, there were little indications here and there, little grumblings, little things like, where'd you get that idea? You know, but the things that stay in my mind, and maybe they're not even the first ones, but like were, you know, the. Another story I tell in the film when he picks me up at the bus station was I came from New York to visit them in New Jersey, and we pass a Hooters, and he just starts ranting about how feminists don't like women with their breasts hanging out working at Hooters. And I said, well, you know, maybe feminists have a point. And he got so angry that he threatened to pull the car over and have me hitchhike home. You know, then there were other things, like suddenly, like, he just refused to wear seatbelts. You know? And later on, it all made sense because Rush Limbaugh told him, you don't really have to wear a seatbelt. You know, nobody can tell you what to do, and, you know, it doesn't do any good anyway. So all these things, they were kind of like, they were little signs like that. A lot of them, you know, and they just get mounting up, and it's alarming.
Well, now, so I got to ask you: do you have any problem? Do you have any issue with an airing of views of different types? I mean,
no.
So, I mean, that wasn't the issue for you with your dad. It wasn't that
no.
He wasn't entitled to have different views than you. It was just what?
No, that's exactly right. It was the anger and the vehemence. So. One thing is, we saw what it did to him, where he was angry all the time, and he seemed to constantly be at war, and not to even speak of the money he was giving, you know, to everything, from the Heritage Foundation to the NRA, when he never even owned a gun. It was all those things. It was like, we were always open to different views, and... very open-minded, and that's what we were like growing up. We would discuss things, but there was no discussing this with him. He was very adamant and really kind of mean about it, too. He didn't want to hear our views.
He didn't want to hear anybody's views, except...
No, he just wanted to convince us of his views.
Now, as the movie is progressing, I'm watching it, and I'm thinking of your poor mom, who seems like she suffered a long time in this situation, because she didn't change. She didn't become a ditto head, if you will. She didn't start watching Fox News. She didn't change sides of any kind. She just put up with him. Did she ever think about leaving him over this?
Yes.
She
actually,
did.
She did. It was very odd, you know, kind of late in life. It might have even been her 70s when... She wrote me an email and said, I can't take this anymore. You know, he's angry all the time, and I'm upset that he's angry, and I might just have to move out. That's a question I never had. I haven't gotten. But, yeah.
And by the
she
way,
usually do think that.
Oh, mm-hmm. I don't want to give away the ending of the film, so just so you know.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Folks, you have to watch this movie to the end. I'm not going to be the one who tells you how it ends, but you'll be surprised. It's very interesting. But one of the really clever hooks to the film, I thought, was that people who hear the title will think, oh, it's just a very personal film about you and your dad. But that's not really it. You interviewed a lot of people, largely through Skype videos we're doing here. Who have a family member who have been equally affected by the rise of the right-wing media. So the brainwashing of my dad could easily be any of their stories, right?
It's everybody's story. You know, when I first started doing this movie, I had no idea how many people would just come out of the woodwork and start reaching out to me. I became like the Ann Landers of this happened to my mom or to my dad or my brother or my sister, you know, and it was overwhelming. I mean, we still get like letters every day from people, and it's kind of heartbreaking, but it did give me more impetus, like, This is a phenomenon. This is like destroying families across America and dividing America. You know, it's not to be played down. It's a very dangerous and serious thing.
Does it mostly affect men, or did you find that men and women equally across the board?
I don't know if it's quite equal, but pretty close. I was surprised that so many people said, well, this is happening to my mom. My mom's listening to Rush Limbaugh. My mom was once a staunch feminist, you know, had her doctorate degree in this or that. And, it just seemed to be everybody. I mean, maybe a little bit more of the older white man thing, but not necessarily.
But one of the people that you interview in the film is David Brock, now of Media Matters, and before that, The Spectator, who has changed dramatically in the opposite direction over his career. He used to be a very right wing conservative guy, who's now come full circle. And you reference that telling moment in history when Hillary Clinton, I think, was on the Today Show, and was talking about the vast right wing conspiracy, which at the point I have to admit. I thought she was out of her mind. I thought she's just making this up and it's another Clinton ploy. Now, 20-some years later, I think, okay, maybe she was onto something there. But Brock certainly thinks that she was onto something.
Well, he knew. Yeah. He was in the trenches. He was an elf. He, you know, what they called, you know, he was on the team to take down Clinton. And, you know, he spilled the beans. And, you know, his conscience got to him or whatever. He felt guilty. And then he wrote all these books about it. And I remember seeing him in The Hunting of the President. Yeah, that was a documentary years ago, which chronicled how they did try and take President Clinton down. They were going to do anything they could because he was a Democrat. So David Brock has written a lot of incredible books about the vast right-wing conspiracy, none of them titled that, but like the Republican noise machine, you know, and I think most people thought she was crazy at the time, but I didn't.
Yeah, I was very surprised over time to realize that she was probably onto something there, or she was literally onto something. Do you think that there should be a 10-step program for families who are dealing with their own Frank Sankos, a place that they can, you know, send their loved ones for right-wing deprogramming?
Well, right now there is a support group on Facebook called the Support Group for People Who Have Lost Loved Ones to Fox News. But I'm sure, you know, if it was to Rush Limbaugh or Alex Jones or anybody like that, you could join.
Wow.
But we are planning on having site, something of a community. Our website is sort of like a repository. It has all of our research and, you know, but also we wanted to have like a place where people could go to exchange information, you know, and look at the information we have. And maybe somebody will invent a 10 steps, I don't know. Possibly the group Hear Yourself Think, because they're very active in every aspect, including deprogramming some people.
I know in my own case, I've had moments in the last 5 or 10 years where, you know, I've just been stunned by friends who I've known for 30 years who suddenly are just so full of hate and anger and they've become racist and they're just, I'm like, where is this coming from? Family member who I've known all my life, you know, a cousin, and it just... the stuff that's come out of his mouth. I reached a point where I stopped talking to him for a while because I just said, when we did resume talking, I said, look, we just can't talk anymore about anything that's political or social. Tell me how the family is, and we'll just let it go at that.
Yeah, it's very disturbing. That was another reason why I wanted to make this movie. I had a friend who was reading Drudge, a very close friend, and every time we spoke, she brought up something political, and just like it turned into an argument, but I didn't understand where she was coming from. But then I started recognizing some of the exact same things that she said my dad was saying around the same exact time, which reflected the whole cyclical thing. You know, the RNC got it out to Fox, which got it out to hate radio, you know, which got it out to the people, and then it got to online stuff. And, you know, if they were going to fact check, they went online, they would see, like, the propaganda, like, confirmed there. So, yeah, it was because it happened to a friend and relatives that,
It's amazing how much media exists fact-free. I mean, it's just devoid of facts, and the idea seems to be that if you repeat a lie often enough, it becomes true, but it's not. And it's, I don't know. I don't get it. One of the things that really surprised me about the film, which I did not know, was that Rush Limbaugh is carried on Armed Forces radio.
Yeah, isn't that horrible?
I couldn't believe that.
So then they come out of the armed forces hating all Democrats, like Democrats are evil, Democrats are the bad people, you know, Democrats caused the last plague, you know, the World War III, you know. I mean, it's such propaganda, and it's so hateful, and it's for 3 hours a day. It just shouldn't be.
Is it my humble opinion.
Of
course. Is there anything from all the research you've done, all the reading you've done, all the watching and listening of right-wing media, is there anything good that you can say about it? Are there some people on that side of things, on that side of the spectrum, that are thoughtful people that do rely on facts, that have, you know, good, I mean, people that you were impressed by, mm-hmm, intellectually?
A couple things. Number one, the other Republicans, respected Republicans, are starting to speak out about this media, like Bruce Bartlett. I think he was in the Bush administration, and he's starting to speak out about it. I kind of like Shepard Smith from Fox News. It seems like he's not as biased. I don't hate Bill O'Reilly because he'll at least go on. You know, he used to go on with Jon Stewart and, you know, Stephen Colbert. And I thought, well, at least the guy is, like, open to change. Whereas you wouldn't see Sean Hannity doing that,
right,
you know, or Rush Limbaugh doing that. So I feel like I'm very open to, like, okay, you have another view, that's fine. And, you know, when I was growing up, Republicans were just people next door that you had barbecues with,
right,
you know? And there wasn't this you're on one team and we're on the other team, or army, rather. You know, one army against another army, and both are evil. And so, yeah, I forget what your question was by
now. No, that's all right.
I hope I answered it.
No, you did. You did answer it. One of the things I've always found is between Fox and MSNBC – that they've become so segregated, each of them, that MSNBC, if you tune in there, you know you're going to get a more left, progressive viewpoint, mostly left. But they very rarely have anyone from the other side come on and argue their issues. It's mostly all singing to the choir, basically, the same people with the same kind of thoughts. It's the same thing that happens on Fox. I kind of have to go spend more time with CNN these days just to get both sides, at least to know what the other side is thinking. But I get a little worn out on MSNBC. It's just
Have you watched it lately, though? It's really striving to be, in my opinion, like more like Fox. And I'm sometimes surprised by you know, they'll have a lot of Republicans on, especially lately, with you know, the election. And Rachel at least gives a really fair.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. You know? Also, the big difference with MSNBC, people always like to bring that up, like, well, MSNBC is the same thing. MSNBC doesn't attach news to their name. You know, it is commentary. Hmm. It's mostly commentary. It's political talk. You know, Fox shouldn't have the right to call itself news because it's mostly commentary. Commentary belongs in the op-ed page, not.
Well, MSNBC does present itself as news during the day parts for the most part, and more so now. They've let, you know, the Ed show is gone and things like that. But
the Ed show. I loved Ed.
Yeah. Ed definitely has a strong point of view, as did Dylan Radigan in years past.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm trying to keep an eye on the time. Let's talk about the film itself. Where do you and Matthew Modine cross in such a way that he winds up sharing their narration with you?
Well, he lives down the street from me, but I didn't know that. That's not how it happened. I know Bill Plimpton for a long time, Bill Plimpton, the animator, and he was running a Kickstarter campaign the same time I was running a Kickstarter campaign. And someone who I had hired for advice, and she said, well, why don't you see if you can get Adam Rakoff, who's running Bill's Kickstarter campaign, to mention your campaign, you know, so you get more donors. And Adam is Matthew Modine's business partner. And so Matthew saw the trailer, the Kickstarter trailer, and next thing I heard was, he wants to get on board. I was like, holy smokes, that's awesome. Because I always admired him. And he's just such an intellect and such an ethical person. You know? I mean, even somebody like Frank Luntz, like just, you know, and he, you know, admires Matthew Modine. And so did Bill O'Reilly. You know, he just comes from a place of love, and he's just been very supportive.
Oh,
I was just lucky.
Oh, that's great. And I was going to mention Bill Plimpton's been on our show before last year with his last film. Did Bill design the art behind you for the cover, for the poster?
This is how it happened. It's very exciting. Me and my assistant and Adam kind of brainstormed about the ideas. Like, well, why don't we have this? Why don't we have that? Why don't we have that? And then we presented it to Bill. And then, you know, we said, go to it. And then with a little bit of direction here and there, like, you got to make the people look angrier, you know, or whatever. He did the poster.
It's very cool. I have to ask you before we go, can you kind of pull up your shirt a little bit so everybody can see your shirt?
Oh, yeah.
Right? So will people be able to buy that at the website? It's a great T-shirt.
Well, if I get some people asking for it again, then I'll put it back on the website again. It was, you know, kind of expensive to make. But if they want to, there's people that ask me. We still have some. They can email me, and if they want, they can buy a T-shirt.
Okay. Well, so if you want the T-shirt, if you've been watching this interview and looking at that shirt and the poster and you're thinking, man, that'd make a great shirt, reach out to Jen on the website. All right. Folks, listen, before we have to go, you can see the documentary, The Brainwashing of My Dad, written and directed by Jen Senko, with narration by Matthew Modine and animation by Bill Plimpton, in select theaters now, as well as on iTunes, Google Play, Vudu, and other video on demand services. You have a website. You want to give out the address for that?
Yeah. The website is www.thebrainwashingofmydad.com. I also have a Facebook page, The Brainwashing of My Dad. And on the website, you could also just click on updates and sign up for updates, and then we would send out information about, okay, it's going to be here, you know, it's going to be there. And also the website will have the information about where and when they could, like, links to the when it goes VOD on Friday.
Great. Well, Jen Senko, fascinating film.
Thank you.
We did not give away the ending. People will have to watch. And thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Media, today.
Oh, thank you so much, Bob. It was a pleasure being here.
Is recorded live before a studio audience full of ditto heads, knuckleheads, and general dickheads who thought they were getting tickets to be in the studio audience of the O'Reilly Factor in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.